The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light. Celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
Locations in and around Montreal, theoldorchard.com.
In Boston, where the Bruins try to even things up against Tampa tonight. How are you, Pierre?
I'm excellent. Sean, way to go. That's a great call.
It was a bit of a safe call, let's be honest.
Well, no, I don't think it's safe at all.
No, I don't think so at all. No, that's going out there. Good.
No, when a guy has scored at this rate, it's actually you think, okay, he's got a few goose eggs coming. But, man, this is incredible what's happening.
Scouting. Don't pay attention to the size. Don't pay attention to what school the guy goes to. Don't pay attention to what his junior numbers are. Pay attention to his athleticism, his character, and his willingness to be coachable. You pay attention to those things, you're not going to go wrong too often when you're scouting.
Pierre, I was so enjoying the broadcast last night. I know you alluded to it on this show a couple days ago. So I just want to actually take a second to acknowledge, and I tweeted this out, it is possible to improve at the age of 71. The work that Doc Emmerich is doing this spring, he sounds like an energetic 40-year-old.
Well, we've been partners for 13 years. We've called 13 straight. This will be 13 straight Stanley Cup finals. We've done a ton of Olympics, tons of gold medal games, tons of huge games during playoffs. I think this is probably the best he's ever been. He is invigorated beyond belief. He loves the league. It never gets old for him. And one of the smart things that Sam Flood did, he focused him in on one series. Rather than having him run around all over the place, he focused him in on one series. And I think it's been great for Doc, and he's just so energized. But, yeah, he's been, first of all, he's not a partner. He's a friend. But secondly, he's a professional. He's Danny Gallivan-esque in terms of professionalism. That's where he is. And that's the highest praise I can give anybody. You know, to compare somebody to Danny Gallivan is a huge, huge thing, and that's where Doc Emmerich is.
Well, it's just, again, it's been a treat. And we, as you know, we don't get every feed that NBC has, right, unfortunately, but it's a treat when you guys are on. So what, for those who may have missed it, what happened at the end there between Letang and Oshie?
Well, TJ went and tried to make a statement on Letang. You know, Christopher's played an okay series till last night. I thought he and Brian Dumoulin were tremendous. It's a big reason why Alexander Ovechkin had no shots on goal. And, you know what it's like in a series that's become very acrimonious, and that's what this is, and it's probably even worse than that. You try to plant a seed of doubt or try to plant a seed for the next game, and what Oshie's doing with Letang, he's going after him high, hard, and probably a little bit too high and a little bit too hard for that time of the game, but it's playoff hockey, so he's just trying to send a little calling card for game number 5, which will take place tomorrow night, and Letang didn't like it, so he pushed back.
Pierre, a couple of people from ESPN reported that when Nick Backstrom left the ice, he flung his stick in disgust and yelled about the effing league, obvious reference to not having Tom Wilson. And I'm not there. I'm just wondering if that's where I understand frustration, but you also got to wonder, where their heads are at. You can't, isn't it part of being a champion? You got to be able to separate that, as frustrating as it is, but you have to help me out with the
compartmentalize.
Word. Thank compartmentalize. You. Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's okay. Listen, I said parabolic last night, where it's parallax. So I got caught up too. Listen, it happens. You know, you work a lot and stuff happens, but Doc caught it quick for me, so I'm grateful. I don't know what Nicky was referring to. Again, I go back a long way with Nicky Backstrom, going back to, the 07 World Junior and up in Sweden, in Leksand, Sweden, and then obviously him being drafted by George McPhee in Vancouver and all the games he's played, whether it was for Brynäs, his club team in Javala in Sweden, or in the NHL. So I've known him a long time. He's nothing short of being their version of Patrice Bergeron. He's like a modern-day, obviously not French-Canadian, but he's like a Jean Rattel. He's a gentleman beyond belief. I don't know if he was alluding to the Tom Wilson thing, Mitch, or if he's alluding to maybe it's the way some of the games are being called. I just don't know.
How do you end up?
There's frustration all around. That's what I can tell you.
How do you end up with 7 guys on the ice for almost a full minute at when your goalie comes out as you're trying to tie it up?
Well, we brought it up right away. I mean, I said, there's too many men on the ice here. And it's just miscommunication. Now, there's a couple things. For fans that have never been on the bench or been down at ice level, when it's a rambunctious and loud building, if you think it's loud in the stands, trust me when I tell you it's probably doubly loud on the bench because you're kind of blocked into a sound chamber and everything kind of stays down there. And unless you're really elevating your voice as a coach or you're a player and you're not listening carefully enough, that happens more than you think. One of the most famous ones happened right in the building that you and I used to call home, the Montreal Forum with the Boston Bruins and too many men on the ice, and eventually leads to LaFleur and then, Yvon Lambert in overtime. But
But that was Scotty. Scotty doing his thing. You're sending LaFleur over the boards every 20 seconds.
Again, it was loud. It was really loud, and it's loud. Pittsburgh was really loud last night, and it's not just crowd noise. It's a lot of music. It's really, really loud. It's as loud as I've ever heard it there, if that makes sense to you, and I've called a ton of big games there.
All right, but still, I don't know. I'm watching that, and part of it is the baggage that the Capitals as a franchise have at this time of year.
Yeah, I understand that.
The championship teams don't make that kind of mistake.
No, I understand that. I think that's a fair point, but I'm going to tell you, and you probably heard me say it last night, I wouldn't quit on these guys in the third period, and they I thought, were really solid, even though they didn't get a lot of shots on net. They still did a lot of really good things. I thought they played a pretty good game. Pittsburgh was just really urgent. You know, Pittsburgh knew they couldn't lose that game, and you saw the pushback, but I think that's a different Washington team than the one you're alluding to from years past.
No, and I think, you know, I don't want to, you know, I'm just speculating here. We're just fans watching it. I think what you said, we had a discussion, Sean Colan and I, yesterday. We disagree on the suspension. There's no question the Tom Wilson effect makes everybody else feel a little tougher. And if that was their first game without him, if that was a lesson that they had to learn, because there is a lot more pushback on this Washington team than we're used to. And they recognize in order to knock off the Stanley Cup champion Penguins, they have to get their collective noses a lot dirtier than they have been at this time of year.
I love that. That's absolutely true. Absolutely true and fair. And I've seen that, though, and I hear it down there. This was a team that when they fell behind, I'm telling you, there was no noise on their bench. There was nobody encouraging anybody else. It was a frayed group. It really was. You don't have that now. This is a tight, unified team. Everybody's told them they're not going to be as good as they were the previous 2 years. And they've taken that as a challenge. And I really admire people that do that and organizations that do that. I would tell you this. That team is completely different from the team that lost a Game 7 to Pittsburgh last year. It's completely different because their give-a-care meter is unbelievably high. It's really, really high. And I love the fact that, you know, you talked about Nicky Backstrom. I've never seen or heard him do anything like that, so this is news to me because he's just such a soft-spoken, polite person. It's amazing. So it shows you how much he cares.
Pierre, yesterday you spoke about playoff hockey being a game of adjustments, and 4 games into the series, I don't think Pittsburgh's second line or third line or even fourth line has an even strength goal. I mean, they're really relying on that top trio. Does Sullivan have to spark something in that sort of depth scoring?
He's tried to do that. That's a good point, too, Sean. He's tried to do that, moving Hornquist around, moving Kessel around, moving Riley Sheahan around. He's tried a lot of different things. Last night, I thought Brian Rust and Connor Sherry were getting close to breaking through. I thought they were, as depth players. I thought Brassard had some really good moments in that game last night. So you're right, they're getting a lot of offense from the one line, and it's really apparent how good that line is. Hornquist has had a tremendous playoff, even though he missed one game, obviously, against Washington and missed a game in the Flyers series. But he's been tremendous, that guy. You know, he was the last player picked in the 05 draft. It's unbelievable. Crosby was one, and he was the last player picked. It's just scary. But, no, you're right. You're right about that.
I'll follow up on what Sean just asked you there, Pierre. I've been tracking the goals we've seen in the playoffs. We've had 58 playoff games, 348 total goals. That's an average of 6 per game, which is up from the regular season. But Sean asked you about the top line and their performance. Overall, among all the top lines still active, they've been on the ice for 195 of the 348 goals. That's about 56% of all the goals scored in the playoffs have been due to top line production. 56%. So you've got 12 forwards, and teams are getting 56% of that total production from their top line. I mean, is it, I hate to simplify, are teams basically going to go as far as their top three players can take them, or do you think that'll change?
I think that, well, I don't know. I mean, I wish I was coaching in a league with Scotty, because we could change that pretty fast. But the red line coming out has changed that a lot, and I think people have caught up to that, how to utilize it as an advantage for more skilled players. But you're right, that's a fair point, because if you look around, the teams that are still playing, their top lines are definitely producing. There's no question about that.
Well, I'd like to know what it's been historically.
I bet you wouldn't be as high as that. I bet you it wouldn't be, especially when the red line was in. I think it would have been really hard for those top lines to dominate like that. It's just a different game. There's more room to play with. There really is. And if you're slick, like a lot of these top lines are, and you don't have to play against Chara and McAvoy, when that's a big difference too. A lot of teams don't have that kind of defensive awareness from two players. That changes a lot. It does. It changes the whole thing for top players when you have guys like that.
Before we get to your game tonight, one more on last night. We knew that Devontae Smith-Pelly was going to be moved up to try to replace Tom Wilson.
Right.
But at some point, he played 18 minutes last night.
I know.
That's too much.
Well, he's used to playing 11. So, yeah, no, that's right. And, you know, he had one game in the playoff where he was over 16 minutes. One game. That's it. I think that's a fair point too. But here's the question you have to ask yourself. Do you mess with your other lines that are so good? That's the thing. And again, they got to be careful. Now you're in a sprint to the finish right now. It's not like you're starting game one tomorrow night. You're in game five and you can't afford to lose it, because you don't want to go back to Pittsburgh down again. You just don't want that. Not with the way the fans are in Pittsburgh right now. You don't want that if you're Washington. So you got to be careful about chemistry.
You're doing so much traveling. Do you get a chance to see the other game?
I do, actually. I watch them on the plane, or I watch them when I get to the next city. And then here's usually my schedule. I get to the next city, I'll crash for an hour and then go to the gym. But before I crash, I'll watch the game. Or when I get back to the hotel room, because I can't sleep at night, I'll watch the tail end of most games and then just crash. Well, that's usually what I do.
Along the board, Shifley and Johansson, who wins the battle. Subban across. Back to Subban. Scores! P.K. Subban has goals in three straight.
Do you remember when P.K. kissed you in Boston?
I do.
He brought
it up to me. One of the writers here brought it up to me in Boston the other day. Absolutely, I remember. Yeah.
He had that same kind of night, maybe even better last night, because he was physically involved as well. It was just, Pekka Rinne finally played like Pekka Rinne is capable of playing. They needed it desperately, and Subban was in full beast mode last night.
Well, the hit on Shifley was a message sender. You know, that's in the neutral zone against a big person who's got unbelievable peripheral vision and strength and skill. I know we talked about Mark before the season started, because I had met him at an NHL event in late August, early September, and I remember telling you, because I came on the air with him and said, I think this guy's just going to have an unbelievable year. And outside of his injury situation, if he hadn't have been injured, you could have probably put him in the MVP discussion. That's how great Shifley is. But that was a message sender, the Subban hit on Shifley in that game. That allows, you know, Nashville to go back for game five with a whole lot of vim, vigor, and vitality. It really does.
Pierre, I was wondering, I Scott Hartnell in for Kevin Fiala last night.
I liked it.
Yeah, go ahead, explain. Well, it worked, so explain why.
Because you get a guy near the end of his career. Remember when Montreal Canadiens got Glenn Sather? Remember that?
Sure.
Sather had never won. He had never won. He was a robust, nasty player. He didn't have a lot of skill, but he hustled and bustled and created mayhem on the forecheck and blocked shots and did all the dirty jobs that star players don't like to do. And it made a difference. And you get players that are near the end of their career that want to hustle and bustle and want to win and play nasty, and that's where Hartnell is. He's never won the Cup. You put him into an environment like that, he's not going to be intimidated, because he's going to say, you know what, this is it for me.
Yeah.
Like I'm laying it out there, and that's a veteran coach. I love those decisions. I really do.
Well, it's just, you worry. He takes penalties all the time. That's why he's not playing, right?
I mean, but I think the one thing that Peter's recognized, Laviolette, is that the standard.
It's
not so much about the physicality. it's a much looser standard than it is during the regular season. They call you on the slash, they'll call you on the hook, but they let you smash people's heads in. It doesn't matter.
All right. To your game tonight, Ryan Donato is finally in. What kind of difference will he make, in your opinion, and who is he going to play with?
Don't know who he's going to play with. I just chatted with him just before I came on with you in the hallway outside the Bruins dressing room. He's going to add speed and skill and playmaking ability. I would say that if he plays with Krejci and DeBrusk, he can make a huge offensive impact. If he plays deeper in the lineup, I don't know if he can make a five-on-five impact. I think he can make an impact on the power play. But they only had one power play in Game 3, you know, and they scored on it, Bergeron, the first period of Game 3. So, again, I don't know how many power plays will be out there. But if they play him up in the lineup like I think they should, and move Nash down a little bit and create a really good checking line with Nash and Backes and maybe Riley Nash, you could have... You know, you could have some fireworks here offensively. The only thing, and this is just a warning for everybody tonight that watches the game, I don't expect the ice to be very good here. Hot and humid in Boston. Northeastern University had their graduation here today. It started at 8:30 this morning. They only started getting the building together about 3.5 hours ago. The doors have been open all day. You know, I could be perspiring if I wasn't at ice level right now in the building. So it's... I would not expect this to be a skillful display tonight. I think this will be a smash-mouth game. If you're going to score, you're going to have to be nasty.
Oh, so a muddy track for Derby weekend.
I would say that's a perfect way to analyze it, a muddy track.
All right. Before we let you go.
A lot of reasons why it didn't last long in the NHL. It just wasn't good enough. I mean, that's what it comes down to. You know, some people like to say, oh, this coach didn't like me that. I was a player that probably hit my ceiling. You know, being a real good hockey player or an AHL All-Star. But to play every night against the likes of Forsbergs or Sakics, you know, I would end up on the negative side.
The new head coach of the Dallas Stars, about an hour ago on this show, Jimmy Montgomery, Pierre.
I'm so happy for him. He's not only is he a great coach, he's a gentleman. He'll carry himself unbelievably well. The Dallas Stars, especially their star players, are in for a treat. They'll love the style of play. I've watched his Denver team play so much. You know, back in the late 80s, I tried to recruit Jimmy out of Pembroke before he went to the University of Maine. I was coaching at St. Lawrence, and his Pembroke teams were so darn good, and he was a big part of it, obviously. He's won everywhere he's ever been. He's always been a winner, and he's a true gentleman. I couldn't be more happy for him. Really, really thrilled.
And he thinks you're brilliant because of what you said about him 2 days ago.
Oh, he's funny.
He's
just a great person. You know, we need more people like Jimmy coaching in the league, and I think they're starting to understand that. I'm all for recycling guys. I am. I'm an old coach. I just substitute a whistle for a microphone. But I'm all for recycling certain guys, but they're young guys out there, and I've told you this for a long time because
yep.
I go to so many of these games. There's tons of young guys that are capable of coaching in the league. There are tons of them, but he's as good as there is outside the league. He's as good as there is. He's really, really good. Dallas is in for a treat.
90 minutes from now, Boston and Tampa, that's where Pierre is. Thanks for another great week. Have a terrific weekend. Where are you tomorrow? You're back in...
Washington tomorrow. Washington tomorrow. Quick turnaround for Sunday afternoon in Tampa. And then Monday night in Pitt for Game 6. And if there's a 6 in Boston Tuesday, I'll be there for that. So it's kind of crazy right now, but it's, you know, it's okay.
Talk to you on Monday. Thank you, Pierre.
Mitch, thanks so much for a great week. Sean, Rod, thanks for a great week. It's been delightful. Thanks so much, you guys.
I think he's a brilliant man if he thinks all those things about me. All kidding aside, Pierre is really good and someone that I've stayed in contact with, and I'm really happy that he's health-free right now.
Yo, what's the connection between...